Good evening, friends. This is Carolyn Evers, one of my most special times of the week. We're here, you're there, we're touching one another, sharing thoughts and information, and Richard and I are just delighted to be here. And as you know, I'm here with my special friend, Richard.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Well, last week, we had a very special messages. I thought they were really great from Alexander the Great. And I feel like we learned so much from Alexander. And you may or may not know that Aristotle was Alexander the Great's teacher. And Alexander's father brought for him the most knowledgeable individual teacher that he could find, and it was Aristotle. And I thought, after speaking to Aristotle, he would make a marvelous guest. He had a particular message to bring to you, our listeners, and it just seemed like a good connection for this week. Now, if you are not familiar with our radio show, I'd like to explain something. Richard does a most magnificent job of relaying our guest message to you, and he uses the right brain magic technique, which he teaches, and he is brilliant at it. Anyone thinking of having a right brain magic session with him speaking to other consciousness, I do highly recommend it. He's marvelous. And so what we do is we ask you, the listener, to place your awareness with Richard's voice in your third eye. See the individual that you might think is our guest. Kind of hard because there's really not a lot of pictures of Aristotle, at least none that I know of. But call quietly within your heart, within your mind, Aristotle. And when Richard describes Aristotle's energy, you might feel that yourself. And it's a marvelous thing if you start using your consciousness in this way. What you can learn not only from this exercise tonight, but what you can learn from life in general and all the different consciousness that we can connect with. So it's a good first step in that. So I call forth Richard and ask you to tell our listeners, as you connect with Aristotle, what his energy feels like to you.
Yes, I've been sitting here as you've been speaking, connecting with him, and this is the most interesting energy because, in a sense, there is a heart base to the energy. And there is this breadth of the energy spread quite widely. But for the first time in doing this kind of connection, there is a lot of energy that I associate with him that is in my head. And I interpret that as being a sign of knowledge, interestingly, more than wisdom. Wisdom turns up in that sort of sideways spectrum, and there are elements of that, but there is this presence of a knowledge energy, which is something I've not experienced before, quite unusual. And so there is not a tremendously powerful energy, but nevertheless a strong energy. And as I say, spread broadly out from the heart, though fairly heart-centered. And as I said, this quite powerful, what I interpret to be knowledge-related energy. Quite interesting.
Thank you, Richard. We appreciate that. And it is a little bit different from energy that you've described with our other guests. And Aristotle told me that he had a message for our listeners. So if you'd be kind enough to refer to him and give us his message, we would appreciate it. I'm anxious to hear.
Me too. It is a pleasure to come forth and to communicate with you all in this manner, and an honor I consider it to follow my very prestigious student in Alexander. And I will begin with some comments about Alexander, because as you understand, he was a very famous and in many ways a very successful general and leader. And I'll say that he was a very willing student. He was a very intelligent young man when I was working with him, and he was like a sponge. And it was not as if I began with a blank slate, as it were, because he was already almost a young man, really. He was still quite young when I began to work with him, at around 11 or so years of age. I first came into contact with him, and it was a year or so before we began to work closely. And already there was a great deal of knowledge in this, I hesitate to say, young man at that age, but really he was. And the knowledge that he grew as he worked with me was quite formidable. He soaked up everything that I gave to him, as it were. And yet he was always a man of his own mind. He learnt from me, but he was not slavish about what he learnt. He was one who built wisdom from what he learnt. And I will say that my advice to him as a general was very much along the lines that history reports, and that was for him, as he went forth and conquered, to indeed conquer in the name of his home country and to dominate those countries that he went to, when in fact he did not do that. And it was an area of disagreement between us. And I have to say, in hindsight, as I view things from this dimension, that I honor the choices that he made, because they were far more in recognition of the different values and views of peoples. And it was not something that I was so open to in my time. I was very patriotic and very focused on the great skills and abilities of the Macedonians and, in a sense, the Greek people also, though I always saw us as being separate from the Greeks. And in that time, we certainly were. And so I wanted to mention Alexander from my perspective. We certainly did not always agree, and history shows that, but I had tremendous respect for his abilities and for his independence and free-thinking approach. He was a man who made up his own mind and acted accordingly, and that shows through in how history views him today. And so I wanted to start with that point. I would also like to take a moment to talk about the nature of knowledge, because truly that was a great focus of mine. Some say I was perhaps the last to know everything there was to know, and I would not for one moment lay that claim for myself, especially looking from this perspective, understanding the depth and breadth of what there is to know and understand. But in the context of that Macedonian or Greek-dominated world, as it was in those times, certainly I was in a place to gather a great deal of knowledge, and it was a great focus of mine to seek to understand as much as possible about the areas upon which I focused, and they were many and varied. And I do wish to take a moment to pay tribute to those who preceded me. As some of you will understand, you might say the traditions that I followed began in a sense with the great Socrates, who was then followed by Plato and then myself. This is how, in a sense, it is reported in history. And whilst there were many others who in many ways equally deserved recognition, it is the fate of history that these be recorded. Though I will say that in my view, the stance that Socrates took in the world, standing in the truth of himself like very few others have done, was a true master, a master in the sense of his knowledge and wisdom that he carried, but also the spiritual mastery that the man carried. And in my view, Plato carried some of that, and I too carried some of it, but not to anywhere near the levels that were represented by Socrates. And so I pay homage to him in particular, because he set an example that in my life I would have to say I was not able to live up to, even though history acknowledges the amount of knowledge that I could gather and garner and, in a sense, share in the world through my writings. I do not consider that I was more than the equivalent of a toenail of Socrates. He was a true master in every sense and was willing to sacrifice his life in the understanding of the truth of who and what he was on a level that I did not appreciate or understand when I lived. And so I wish to acknowledge that greatness, that balance between the wisdom of living in this world and the spiritual understanding of what lies beyond it. And I have taken this step into history because, in a sense, it relates to your time. And that is because you live in a time which, in a sense, reflects to a great degree the transformation that occurred between Socrates and myself, where there were elements of, you might say, connection to the spiritual, but in truth was primarily focused on the knowledge of this dimension. And that is what you find in your time, this dominance by the what you call scientific method, the scientific process, if you will, the knowledge of that dimension and the, in a sense, denial of the spiritual basis that brings forth what is in that dimension. And for the most part, those who claim to connect to the world beyond this one through the churches really, as you understand, have deeply manipulated and distorted the truth of that fundamental connection. And so, in a sense, what you are seeing in this time of transition is not only a recovery, if you will, to what existed before the fall in Atlantis, but in its own way, a recovery of what Socrates represented, and that is the ability to live in this world and to understand it, but also to understand the context which gives rise to it, the truth of who and what you are as a human being, a spiritual being on a human journey. And to understand that and not be caught up in the preservation of human life as you experience it, though I do not wish to diminish that value, but to acknowledge that truly your spiritual nature is far more important, far more powerful, far more the truth of who and what you are than what is expressed in this physical form in this dimension. And this understanding will explode in your experience for all of humanity. This connection will be reignited, recreated. And yes, it does go way beyond what, in a sense, Socrates was able to experience, as I understand it. However, in a sense, it is acknowledging, it is walking in the traditions that he represented. And it truly is a wonderful time that you exist within, where these connections are being recreated. And you might say the path that led from Socrates to Plato to me, and you might say down through individuals like René Descartes, who reinforced this separation of what you might consider the spiritual from the scientific, although in truth, in his terms, it was a separation between the church, the religious expression, and the scientific, in a way. You might consider that being the start of the true separation, the true final denial, if you will, of the truth of existence. That path that has led to here will now be retraced and retraced very quickly. And so, in a sense, reclaiming where Socrates stood and then moving beyond it, returning to the power and the capabilities that every human being readily had at its disposal prior to the fall in Atlantis. This transition truly is a wondrous process. And in many ways, as I say, the decay accelerated from the time of Socrates, where there were individuals who were willing to stand where someone like Socrates stood in that truth of who and what they are, down to this situation where those who would walk for the most part a scientific path do so in denial of that spiritual truth that is represented within every individual. And I know there are some great exceptions to this. I do not wish to be so black and white as to indicate there are no scientists who truly understand their spiritual nature, because indeed there are some very fine examples of this. So, my friends, this was my message to you as much as anything else, and that is this wondrous connection that is emerging in your time, that in a sense reconnects with the traditions of ancient Greece. Truly, it is a wonderful time as the explosion of knowledge and wisdom, knowledge and understanding comes forth in your time and becomes reconnected to that inner spiritual truth, that inner spiritual understanding that gives rise to all of this knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And so it truly is a wondrous time that you find yourselves in, and I simply wished to acknowledge it in my way from where I stand and who I was in that lifetime.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your message. This is a serious question to me. In your understanding, would you explain what a spiritual being is? You mentioned this, and yet everyone has different concepts. You know, religious teachings have taken a place, and yet from the other side, I would suspect that there is a different answer. Would you share that with us, please?
In a sense, every individual, every human being is a spiritual being. The issue is that most do not understand what that means or what it represents. And in my view, religion, for the most part, has usurped the truth of the spiritual nature. In essence, it is reflected by the teachings of that one that you call Yeshua or Jesus, where he was teaching for people to go within, to connect within to that spiritual wisdom, that spiritual truth of who and what you are. And that is a spirit being first, which has then come forth and, you might say, taken on the cloak of the human physical form for this experience. And if you meditate and you go within and you are committed to that path, then over a period of time, and for most this is years, not days or weeks, you will begin to open up that understanding, that wisdom, that inner connection that is the fundamental truth of every individual. And as you simply accept that fundamental truth, it becomes the foundation upon which life is constructed. And you can stand in that truth of your spiritual nature and participate in life. Again, one of the teachings that Yeshua brought forth was being in the world but not of the world. And this is one of the keys. And indeed, it is one of the reasons I referred to Socrates, because he stood in that place. He was able to be in the world but not of it. And through his practices, he became able to master the physical experience in a manner akin to some of the great yogis of the Himalayas in your times. And I'm not necessarily advocating that you need to walk that particular path. I am simply saying that that inner connection is the truth of things. And religion in all its forms has acted to place itself between the individual and that fundamental truth. There is no need for any form of religious structure for that experience to exist. It has been hijacked by religion in all of its forms. And as the two of you have often explained, these processes are processes that in a sense began in Atlantis, where those dark priests began to hijack so much of what was occurring in Atlantis. And this has happened throughout time, where the priests have taken the great spiritual teachings and modified them, you might say distorted them, for their own purposes of power and control. And this is true in all religions. I make no exceptions. And so that, for me, is the distinction between religion and spirituality and the true nature of what it means to be a human being.
Thank you. I want to explore now what it is like when someone crosses to the other side. I believe that personality stays intact. Would you agree with that? A person's personality is intact when you cross over?
To a great degree, I would, though I would add that there are elements of personality that reflect the life circumstances of an individual in many cases. And as understanding shifts, so some of those aspects of personality can change or can fall away in that broader understanding. But in essence, I would agree with you.
Thank you. Do people take their memories with them when they cross over?
They do take their memories with them.
And this point about truth. If a person is on this earth and they have beliefs that really are not accurate and they cross over, how do they learn what is the truth? Are there teachers? Are there records? Tell me how a person progresses on the other side.
The first thing that happens as someone crosses over is they begin to realize that there is a great deal more beyond the human experience. As you understand it, when a soul comes forth and incarnates as a human being, so much of memory and ability and understanding is shorn from that soul as it incarnates. And so once you cross over, many of those connections begin to be re-established. And so simply putting some of those connections in place and that perspective in place means many misunderstandings simply dissolve in the face of that truth. However, in addition to that, in a sense, that finger of consciousness that has come forth and incarnated, once it returns to, you might say, a higher dimension, in a sense, it still lacks a lot of the understanding and wisdom that is contained within the monad from which it came forth. And so, in a sense, it needs to be educated if it wishes to build its own wisdom. And that education, that teaching, is available to all souls. It is simply a matter of the individual choosing how they wish to progress in that learning process. And so you might say there are endless schools of various sorts to learn anything an individual soul wishes to learn. I will say that most souls, you might say, take a holiday after they cross over, because it is well recognized that the human journey is indeed a very challenging one. And whilst many of humanity fear death, in truth, the process of crossing over is an experience of liberation, an experience of being set free, because it is almost as if the soul is put inside a pressure cooker when you incarnate as a human being, because of the very dense dimension and because of the incredibly dark energies which are present upon the planet. And so it is like a release, a revelation almost, when soul crosses over to the other side. And you hear many stories in your dimension of near-death experiences where individuals often do not wish to come back because they feel so liberated, they feel so freed, they witness so much light and opportunity, you might say, love and peace for the most part on that side. And so many do not wish to return, but usually they have returned because they have not completed their work on one level or another. So most souls take, you might say, something of a holiday to recover and begin to acclimatize to the new circumstances in which they find themselves. And there is also a review process, if you will, of the lifetime and a comparison with the mission in terms of reviewing what was planned and what was achieved. And there really is no judgment in that process for the most part. Most souls, in a sense, if there is any judgment involved, it is the soul, in a way, judging itself. And so there is great guidance present in that process, understanding what was planned for the lifetime and what actually unfolded. So those processes proceed, in most cases, relatively quickly after the soul crosses over. And then there is that, as I described it, a holiday, a time of peace, if the individual chooses that. Although more and more souls, as I witness it, that have crossed over in more recent times have chosen a path of rapid learning to try and assist with this time of change that is occurring on the planet.
Thank you. It is my understanding that the soul has great creativity and power. My question revolves around the influence that a soul might have on this dimension. So, can a soul from the other side change particles of energy in this dimension? And how can they influence human beings?
There are some very strict laws, you might say, about how other souls that are on what you call the other side of that veil are able to interact with humanity. Yes, we recognize that the ones that you call the dark have not obeyed those laws because they simply come forth and do whatever they wish. However, for those who follow the laws, there are some very clear limitations on what can be done, what can be undertaken, if you will, by way of direct influence of the unfolding experience upon the planet. However, the way that this can be done and is done by many souls, by many guides in many cases, is through the intuition of individuals. Individuals who are open to guidance of a positive nature are indeed guided through their intuition. It is this kind of clearinghouse through which so many can communicate with an individual. And so this actually occurs quite often. I would say that attempts to influence individual humans are far more widespread than the results might indicate, because most people are, in the current circumstances, not very aware of that intuitive guidance that is being fed to them. But where there is that opening to for an individual to listen to that intuitive guidance, then it is very often being provided by many great spiritual beings.
Thank you. You discuss those souls that respect the laws that were set down and those who don't, which you call the dark. Are they somehow punished if they do not obey the law?
In a sense, if they do not choose to reform or have not chosen to reform their ways and remember that they are in truth light beings that have walked a particular path and return to be healed, then they will pay the ultimate price of having their souls deconstructed. And indeed, this process has been proceeding for some time and is very close to ending. Most of those beings that have refused to obey those laws have already been deconstructed. So in a sense, there is a price that is paid. Ultimately, they are held to account. Though, should they choose to return to the light, as many have done, and be healed, there is no retribution, but rather simply an acceptance of a change of path and the healing of those individuals. There is no judgment, if you will, for the paths walked, because in a sense, it has all been within the spectrum of experience. And as you understand it, time when such practices associated with that path of the dark, that time has, in a sense, ended, and you are within that small time window when there is the cleaning up, if you will, as a result of those activities and the cleaning up of those that have expressed a intention to continue in this manner, despite all of the overtures and efforts that have been made to have them return to the light.
Thank you so much for your explanation of Life on the Other Side. I'd like to come back for a moment to the life that you lived when you were on Earth and give me some idea as to how the Greeks felt about their religious concepts. I haven't read too much about that. Was there a religion, and how did they practice it?
Firstly, I wish to mention that, in truth, I was not Greek but Macedonian, and I did certainly spend time in Greece as you understand it. And although we held a great deal in common with the Greeks, there were differences between the Macedonians and the Greeks. And so the Greeks in particular were, as you understand it, worshippers of a great many gods, if you will. They had an array, you might say a Parthenon, of gods. And they represented various aspects of life. And they truly were held to be gods in a very real sense. And so you are aware, I'm sure, of Greek mythology and the Greek gods as they were for various purposes. Many of those have survived down into your time. And in truth, they were trusted and believed in and were held to have certain powers, active powers in the unfolding of life. And as you understand things, when the power is granted to a figure of that nature, then indeed they do have a level of power, because implicit is within that is the power granted by humanity to them. Intention becomes expressed. A life, in a sense, is formed that carries those powers. So even if those individuals did not exist, and in some cases they began, if you will, as true expressions of humanity and others not, they did indeed take on a life of their own because of the way they were held by the Greek people. So they did not have, in a sense, a religion as you would see a religion. And in my view, for most of them, the spiritual path that I was describing about going within was not where they were either. Rather more, they were entangled with so many expressions of gods of particular powers and for particular purposes in the living of life.
And were the Macedonians similarly inspired as far as religion or spirituality?
Our path was somewhat different. We did not share the same, you might say, array of gods. Rather, the model was somewhat similar in the sense that we had several gods that we looked up to. But indeed, there was more of a spiritual, what you would call a spiritual tradition of going within, than perhaps was so in Greece in my experience. So you might say there was a mixture of the Greek threads and a true spiritual tradition. And I indicated that that spiritual tradition was something that was perhaps not as strong in me as those that had, in a sense, gone before me. But if one looks at Alexander, for example, he grasped those spiritual traditions and walked them, in a sense, despite my teachings or in addition to the teachings that I gave him, because those spiritual traditions were very alive and well within the Macedonian world if an individual wished to connect with them. And there are those who considered Alexander a great spiritual master, and I would agree with those assessments.
Thank you. I'm intrigued with your use of the word intention, because we use intention also. What I was intrigued with is, if I'm correct in this, intention gives power of some sort to a person or an action. Do I have that right?
Yes.
How important is intention in a person's life on earth?
Intention is very important. It is the force which drives so much that occurs in an individual's life. It is severely underestimated by most people as to the power of intention, even in the world as you experience it. Yes, your ability to manifest in a direct sense is, for most people, currently shut down, although that will change. But the intention to bring forth a life experience, for an example, or the intention to have events unfold in a particular way in your life, or indeed within a community, those intentions are extremely powerful because they begin to fashion energy. As you know, all that exists in matter is simply, you might say, a standing wave of energy. And so intention is a powerful scalpel to shape that expression in your dimension. And you see this very often in an individual's life, where they have a powerful intention to achieve certain things within their life. If that intention is strong enough, then indeed, for the most part, they will achieve what they have set out to do. Or if they don't specifically achieve it, certainly their life will be directed towards that in very powerful ways. So intention is extremely important in your dimension as it exists today. And when individuals come together and work with intention, the power that comes forth from that can be very great indeed. In a sense, it is the power of intention that underlies the basis for community within your dimension. Because when there are common interests, common desires, dare I say it, common intentions, you begin to fashion things cooperatively to look a particular way. And there are some unusual expressions of this. You might look, for example, at some of the unusual traditions that you see in the world that have, in a sense, had religious elements to them, where, for example, they have been separated off from the rest of civilization. The Quakers might be an example in your area, or the group that live in your area, Carolyn. Sorry, I can't think of the name of the Amish people. In a sense, what brings those communities into form is an intention of commonality that sees them fashion their lives in a particular way. You might say that this is perhaps more driven by tradition, but if you examine where those traditions began, and then you look at how those traditions have been given life, they are actually given life through intention. Those people intend to live according to those traditions. And so there is this shaping which goes on in your experience and the experience of so many of humanity through the power of intention. And the same is true, I might say, of those dark ones that seek to control humanity. They work powerfully with intention. They have very clear intentions of what they are out to achieve. And they have been very successful over a long period of time. They use other tools as well, but intention has been very powerful in their hands.
Thank you. I think this is very important. And I would just like to take a moment and go over this. Intention seems to be something that causes us to manifest what we want. I think that you would agree with that, correct?
I would agree that intention is a very important element in manifesting what you want.
And when you have other people working with you with intention, it even makes it more powerful.
Yes.
Now, if a person is working by themselves and they want to accomplish something or produce a specific result, is it simply, I intend to accomplish this, or is it acting in a certain way? I mean, do we have to use those words, I intend, or is our actions implicit in the intention?
Much of intention is married into the way a person acts. They may not consciously express an intention in the formal way that you have raised here, although in many cases, there is some value to be gained from this use of a structured, verbalized intention, because firstly, it galvanizes the purpose, you might say, of the intention, but also it helps for the individual to clarify exactly what their intention is. And so it can, in a sense, increase the power of the intention process, though in truth, the fundamental elements of intention are deeply married into the way a particular individual acts, because in a sense, their actions are fashioned around the backbone of that intention, whether it be to intend to gather together a great deal of wealth, whether it be an intention to live in balance with nature, whether it be an intention to live a harmonious life, whether it be an intention to create a very loving household. All of these things carry a powerful intention at their heart, and then the individual fashion things around that intention by way of actions to reinforce it. So the heart of the intention is expressed through action. However, the process of formally expressing an intention has an additional power also.
And if we add visualization to our intention, in other words, visualizing the final result, does that boost the power much higher?
The process of visualization certainly adds to the process. In part, it is because the individual is taking the time to hold those energies steady, to hold them in place within their mind. And so above all else, the process of visualization is in a sense focusing the energies for a longer period of time. Also being in the place of accepting its unfolding in joy and gratitude
are powerful additional elements to this. I will add that the time in which you now live, intentions which are fashioned, which may be at the expense of others, will no longer be activated by the currently available energies. This has changed upon your planet. So it is worthwhile making note of that change. The other thing that I would add is that there are traditions that have been well understood upon your planet for a long time, but which for the most part have been lost, and that is power of gathering together with others at the time of events such as the full moon, the new moon, the equinox, and the solstice. All of these moments in time carry additional energies, additional power to within which to set intention and shape it. These traditions were long used by humanity on many levels and in many walks of life, and there are still groups who continue to use these. However, for the most part, they have been lost to humanity.
I would like to thank you so much, Aristotle, for your time that you've shared with us. We are at the end of our time, so I offer you, on behalf of our audience, gratitude for you coming forth and sharing these concepts with us. And I would like to thank Richard for his great abilities that he uses to bring forth these messages. And thank you also, Richard. So the two of you have our gratitude.
And thank you, Carolyn, for your, as always, very well-directed questions.
Thank you. Well, Richard, we have 2 minutes. Would you like to have the last word?
Fat chance. we've been talking about the right brain magic sessions quite a bit, and I would like to reconnect with those beautiful key past life sessions you've been doing with people, because truly the experiences that come forth in those are quite wondrous on so many occasions. And, you know, as we've suggested to people, having a right brain magic session first helps enormously in those sessions. And basically what Carolyn does is to work with the individual to connect with a past lifetime which is chosen by their soul, a lifetime which has relevance to them in this lifetime, whether it be that that incarnation wishes to connect with them and guide them in this lifetime, or whether it's something they need to learn and understand about themselves, often both of those things. And truly what comes forth in those sessions is little short of extraordinary, in my view. The understandings that come forth are truly wondrous.
Well said.
I'm pleased you agree.
Well, I will agree with this, that the workings of the soul in choosing a lifetime, I hold a space so that the individual can actually go back to that lifetime to meet that other finger of consciousness that came forth from the same monad is just extraordinary, because what happens is the other fingers of consciousness will teach the soul in this current lifetime. It is strictly amazing. We've come to the end of the hour, Richard. I would like to say to our listeners, thank you for being with us, listening to us, and until next week.
Probably not next week. A couple of weeks time.
Yeah, Richard will be traveling.
So good night, everyone.
Good night, friends.